Good morning, church family, and visitors as well, our extended family. Today's Bible reading is from Genesis chapter 1, verse 27 up to chapter 2, verse 3, and it is found on page 1 of the church Bible. So Genesis chapter 1, beginning verse 27. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God he created them, male and female he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Then God said, I'll give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food, and to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food, and it was so. And God saw that all that he had made, and it was very good, and there was evening and there was morning the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. The next reading is from Matthew chapter 11, beginning verse 27. And that's found on page 792 in the church Bibles. I think there is a 791, but 792 on the version that I'm reading. Okay, Matthew chapter 11, verse 27. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me? Oh, lovely. Oh, there we are. Now I can hear me too. I think we're going to need a clicker up here. I wonder if Cassia might have it, or the team at the back. Oh, Dave, thank you very, very much. My name is Adriel, and it's so wonderful to be here with you today. I'm one of the team from Moore College, and I just want to thank you for welcoming us so warmly, that warm, winty welcome. And not only is it a great joy to come and spend time with you, it's a huge pleasure and privilege to study and celebrate the goodness of Jesus with you as well. I wonder if the lectern mic is also on and might need to be muted. We're going to spend this week and the next looking at two important aspects of our human existence. And so if you're here and you're a human, well, hopefully you find that you have a natural interest in what we're going to be talking about. Next week, another member of our team named Andy will be discussing the important topic of life. But this week, we're going to be thinking about peace. Peace. I wonder when you last considered the idea of peace. It's not a word that you and I tend to use in the everyday, unless it's followed by and quiet, which might mean getting some space from noisy kids or distance from buzzing phones and tricky people and stressful situations. But there's a much deeper dimension to peace, isn't there? I mean, perhaps we've resigned to talking about peace in quiet, because real peace sounds a bit like a fairy tale. The stuff of birthday candle wishes. Because in this life, peace can be elusive, can't it? It's hard to grasp, hard to obtain, and unrest is the norm. Perhaps even this week you felt yourself a lack of peace. Anything from anxiety to confusion to frustration to sorrow. That inner rest that is fueled by the outer unrest of our world. Unrest seems inescapable. And yet I think we would say that peace is essential. And I think that is the tension of our lives as humans today. It's a tension that leads us to seek for peace wherever we can. But a tension that can break us when we feel that peace doesn't come easily. When push comes to shove, I wonder what you think of this. I imagine that some people would prefer not to have any life at all rather than to have a life without peace. And still, others would value peace so highly that they would joyfully give up their own life if it meant that someone else could have peace. We're going to meet someone like that in just a moment. But before we do, it may or may not surprise you to hear that our need for peace is a need that God outlines from the very start. In fact, you could even say that our love of peace, the love of peace that you and I share, is because of God's love of peace. Earlier on, we heard a passage read out from a section of the Bible called Genesis, a very famous section from the very first page of the Bible, actually. The first chapter when God makes our world. And in it, we heard this world-changing truth. God created mankind in his own image. And what does that mean? Well, we are who we are as humans because God has uniquely made humans like you and me to be like him, to love peace like he does, to know and represent him, and to work like him and with him in this world. So I know that there are a few humans out there today. Know that you are enormously privileged. Because whether you've known it, whether you've recognized it before or not, you are God's representative in the world. You were made to work like God and with God in this world. But what sort of world did God make for us to do this work in? Well, it's clear that God didn't create this slightly faulty world for us to represent him in, some sort of Kickstarter version, a prototype, a test version, rushed to market with lots of problems, waiting for an upgrade. No, God stands back from this world that he's just made, it's full of life, and he calls it very good. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. So, I think this is what we're meant to understand. When God has made the world at the first, it's perfect. It's perfect. A world that is a symphony of joyful life, a finely tuned cosmos in perfect and harmonious peace. And to top it all off, as we read on the seventh day of creation, then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So God, he lovingly forms and fills this earth out of, well, even less than thin air, out of nothing, in 6 days. And each of those days have their beginning and end, as we heard in the reading. But this seventh day is special, and it's special for a couple of reasons. So firstly, God rests on this seventh day. And this word rest is going to be quite an important one today. So just make a note of it, and we'll come back to it in just a moment. But secondly, while all the first 6 days of creation have a start and their end, well, the seventh day is different. This day of rest has no end at all. And this is significant. It's as though the seventh day, this state of rest, it just sort of carries on eternally, endlessly. The world that God has made is harmonious, and peaceful. And it's this ongoing, perfect peace, which is referred to as rest. So what is rest? Well, rest is living in peace. And it isn't defined as inactivity, which is perhaps how we might first think of it. And rest is not even the opposite of work. No, rest is life lived according to God's good design. It's the life that you and I were made for. The life that's good for us. And so perhaps it could be said of all living things, R.I.P., rest in peace. And by that we wouldn't be saying go lie in a grave or sort of detach from reality. We would be saying go and live according to your Maker's design. Do the work he's given you. Live according to his good rule as you bring his order to the world around you. So the Bible's first pages show us that the world that we live in was designed, engineered, lovingly formed for rest, for peace. Which I think it begs the question, doesn't it? Well, why isn't our world filled with peace? Why isn't our world filled with peace? Well, the answer to this question comes just a page later. We said we were on page 1. Depending on the font size in your Bible, maybe you're on page 2 or 3 now. And there, we see a world where humans have put themselves in the place of God, deciding for themselves where what is right and wrong. And we see that peace is broken, and unrest enters into the world. So I think this idea is really key to understanding all that God does and says after this moment. So I wonder whether a diagram might help. So in a perfect world, God is recognized as the highest authority. You can see that's the crown above his name there. He's purposefully made this world and us to live in it. And he actually knows right from wrong, so his instructions lead to life and his ways lead us to peace. And so when humans recognize him as the highest authority and relate to him obediently and with love, that's what those arrows there signify, well, then there's peace with God. There's peace with one another and peace in the world. But in a world where people regard anyone besides God as the highest authority, whether themselves, someone else, another God, or another belief system, then God's rule is ignored. And I have another slide, diagram just to help us with this idea here. So you can see that people here no longer look to God, but they actually act like their own gods. And to reject the true God is to reject reality, isn't it? And when we all begin to think and live untruths, when we live according to this lie, there's chaos and not peace in our world. That's that big, messy knot in the middle there. We all live and think in ways that contradict God. And the Bible calls this sin. And it's something that we all do. And it leads to a world where unrest and death and disorder are the norm. Without peace with God, there is no peace in the world. And so as you read these first pages of the Bible, I think we find ourselves asking a big question. Maybe you've been thinking it too. How is rest and peace going to be reestablished in this world that God has made? If you like, how is it even possible to go back to the factory settings? A world where humans recognize the one God as the highest authority. And the world once again has peace. Well, we've done a bit of groundwork now, haven't we? But my hope is that it helps us to appreciate Jesus' words all the more when we hear them. We're going to be hearing them from Matthew's Gospel, which is where we had the reading from before. And you might wonder what Matthew's Gospel refers to. Well, we're looking at a book of the Bible written by someone who was an eyewitness to Jesus' life and teachings in the first century. This particular author's name was Matthew, and he wrote on the basis of what he saw and heard personally. So he's writing history, but this history is filled with these really beautifully, deeply personal moments with Jesus, so that we can get to know Jesus like Matthew did. And so I think we really get to meet Jesus as we read the Gospels. That word gospel comes from a word meaning the announcement of a new ruler and the announcement of good news. I think both are true when we're reading Matthew or Mark or Luke and John, those four authors who produced these four Gospels. And they wrote what they did convinced that they were announcing a new world order with Jesus. Jesus, who is God and human, bringing God's rule to earth as God's king. Now, each one of the four Gospels focus in at the end on Jesus being killed. Jesus was killed even though he never sinned. He lived in perfect obedience to God. But the authors make it clear that Jesus died willingly, so that the world could have peace with God. You'll hear a bit more about this next week, so please come back for that. But an amazing truth about Jesus is that he didn't remain dead. Jesus certainly died, and amazingly, he certainly rose to life and is now ruling as God's king, as the highest authority, the name above all names, as the Bible calls him. And he's waiting to return and bring the peace of heaven to earth. And why is he waiting? Why is he waiting? Jesus is waiting so that people like you and me can hear his offer of peace and accept it in time. And so as we come to hear Jesus' words now, we aren't hearing some sort of ancient quote of the dead. We're hearing him speak to us right now in this present moment, the words of God's living King, his voice resounding from the throne in heaven to you and me today. So let's hear what he has to say for us. He says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." I wonder, what do you feel as you hear that invitation? This tender and loving invitation to a world that is weary and hurting. "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." Jesus speaks to this world of unrest that you and I live in, and he offers us long-awaited rest. How many of us here would wonder, maybe you've wondered this before, what would it be like if I met God? Perhaps we expect it to be terrifying, or guilt-laden, or nerve-wracking. Maybe you've felt hesitant to speak to God or trust him in the past. Maybe you wonder where you stand with him, or maybe you don't really know him. Well, hear the tone in which he speaks to you now. The love and mercy in his voice. Can you hear the warmth and the assurance? "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." See, Jesus here speaks with the tenderness of one who knows the pains of his people and with all the authority of one who can help them. Rest for the weary and burdened. I think there's something quite disarming about that invitation, and maybe you do too. And perhaps it's because that invitation is to establish a relationship with Jesus. We often think of peace as a place, but peace is not some place that you can retreat to. It's not a practice you adopt. Peace is a person you entrust yourself to. It's the person. It's the person, the Prince of Peace, as the prophets called him in advance. We saw earlier that apart from God, there is no peace in the world. Well, God has come to us. Peace with God is available. And peace begins with coming to Jesus. Just as unrest with God is expressed through sin, amazingly now peace with God is expressed through restful living. So look how Jesus explains the rest that he's offering in verse 29, because I think it is quite surprising. He says, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." So how is it that the weary and the burdened actually find rest? I think amazingly it's through a new work. It's not through inactivity, but a new way of life with Jesus. Cassia very helpfully taught us what a yoke was before and clarified that it's not the thing inside an egg. So Jesus saying, "Take my yoke upon you," he's not offering to crack an egg on your shoulder. No, the yoke is a wooden beam to pair animals like oxen together so they can pull a load together. Perhaps some of us have grown up in contexts where that is how some of the heavy farm work got done. And just for a refresher, in case we've forgotten, that is what a yoke looks like on the back of some oxen. And as you can see, that together element, it's really key here, isn't it? Like, if you're yoked to someone, you're in perfect alignment. You're doing the same work, you're moving in the same direction. You're working together. And I think this is important. So Jesus isn't saying, here, take this yoke upon yourself, and I'm just going to sort of stand back here, and I can crack the whip. Jesus is not a hypocrite. He's doing this good work himself. He's living the faithful life, and he loves to do so. And so he's showing us how it's done. In verse 29, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me." So this is Jesus' yoke. It's his yoke. It's on his back. As we saw earlier, we said we were made in the image of God. And that means that we work like God and with God. But isn't this just such a perfect image of partnership? Here's Jesus wearing the yoke. He's living God's way. And there's this great big gap next to him waiting for you to fill it. And he's asking you to join him. I wonder, what do you think of that? How does that make you feel? How does it feel to be invited to live alongside Jesus as God's King, to learn from him, to work with him? Perhaps you and I have stories and backgrounds that make us feel like Jesus might want someone else and not us. We might wonder if it's perhaps too scary or shameful to start now after so many years of ignoring or not knowing Jesus. But did you hear who he called? All you who are weary and burdened. So the more troubled your story has been, the longer you have yearned for peace, the more this invitation is directed to you. So if you're that person who feels hesitant or ashamed, know that Jesus loves you. He really loves you. He wants you to come to him. He wants peace for you. That's what his invitation is all about. He's gentle and he's humble. And so there is no shame when we come to him. There is no need to fear. Because he pours out his affection on all who come to him humbly and trust him for peace. "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart." I think it's possible to feel a bit intimidated by this offer to work with Jesus because we feel like we're just going to mess up. But we shouldn't feel intimidated, because in fact, every follower of Jesus is a student who messes up. None of us were experts when we came to Jesus. And if we waited until we were, then there would be no followers of Jesus. There's only one master, Jesus, who is gentle and humble to teach us. And if I can put it this way, the rest of us, we're all just wearing our L plates. We're learners, learning from Jesus as we follow him. We're constantly learning more about what God is like. We make mistakes and we find that Jesus is more gracious and patient than we could ever imagine. And we grow in confidence as we continue living with him as God. And his life and his work is good. It's really good. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. We said before, it might sound strange that the way forward for the weary and the burden is to take on a burden, to pull the load with Jesus. Now, except that this is the burden that replaces the one already on our backs, that replaces the life without God that leads to unrest. Jesus' ways, they don't shackle his people and keep them from living. Actually, they unleash us to live beautifully, to live like Jesus, as God intended. If you like, they line up perfectly with the purpose that God has made us for, to love God and live his way in his world. My yoke is easy and my burden is light. Jesus' mention of light burdens, it's in direct comparison to the religious leaders of his time who placed really heavy religious burdens on the people under their care. They invented religious obligations that they were obligations that would never give people peace with God or peace in their lives. I think it's important to know that there are countless religions and ways of living in our world today. But if they aren't the way of Jesus, then they're heavy burdens that cut against the grain of what God has made us to be. They're shackles that oppress us and hold us back from life and peace with God. And they gradually break us. But Jesus' yoke is easy, and his burden is light. Now, that's not to say that living as a follower of Jesus is going to be pain-free. It can be very costly to follow Jesus. You may lose friends. Your family may reject you if they don't love Jesus. Your life may look very, very different in significant ways as you learn a new way of life. But when you think about it, it really ought to. Life ought to look different when we're moving away from a life of unrest and to a life of peace with God. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. And so I'll ask, is that you? Is that you today? I expect many of us are pretty good at acting like everything is okay. Others of us might be proud, and even if God himself offered us help, we might turn him down. Others of us are perhaps so used to a life of unrest that we may not believe that there is a better way forward. But I think it's worth asking again. Are you weary and burdened? If you are, then this can be your day of relief. Come to Jesus. It wouldn't be a surprise if you accepted Jesus' offer today. I think it would be more surprising if you didn't. Because this is the life that every human was made for. As a bird soars through the sky, as a fish swims in the sea, so a human hears Jesus' call and follows his ways. The yoke of Jesus is specially made for us, and it never leaves us bruised or chafed or exhausted. And that is the peaceful life of a follower of Jesus. There will be perfect peace forever when the Lord Jesus returns, peace forever for all who accept his invitation. And of course, there might be times when it doesn't feel like that now. Followers of Jesus are still sinners in this world of unrest. We're still weak. We're still learning. But as we go on wearing this yoke of Jesus, following him, learning from him, our joy increases, and our peace is magnified, and our peace will be full when God's King returns to bring peace to everyone who has come to him. So we asked, very early on, we asked, is it even possible to go back to a world of peace? And I hope you can see now, this is exactly what Jesus is calling us to. Come to him. Take his yoke upon you. Live his way, the way that God designed you to. And find peace. And the promise, it's yours for the taking today. And that voice from the throne has spoken. So let me once again leave you with a gentle and humble master's call. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light.
Thanks, Adriel.